What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 65, Functional Movement Assessment, recorded January 8th, 2014, with our special guest today, Brett McQueen. Brett is, he's got a whole lot of background, and I'll tell you some of that, and I'm sure he'll get to some of it later, but he is a consulting athletic trainer. He's been certified as an athletic trainer for 2.5 years. He's been in Texas and Arkansas and Oklahoma and a bunch of other different places. But before we get to Brett, I want to make sure I introduce myself. I am, of course, Jeremy Jackson, the host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. With me today is...
George.
Morning.
Edith.
Morena.
Brianna.
Marissa.
Alex.
Oh, Aisha.
Lorena.
I love how they forget their names over the Christmas break.
All the time. Just never fails.
Yeah. I know you're used to just calling yourself by your Twitter handle, right?
Always.
Yeah. That's what I figure. Of course, there's other students doing other jobs. You got Michelle over there. She's on, she's on the show notes typing in stuff. So, Brett, hopefully whatever you say, she's going to record or she's going to type in so that it makes it easier for people to find later. If you want to join the conversation, I know we should have some people watching live on the Google Plus Hangout. So you can do that there. The links to all that stuff are on our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Almost every Wednesday we broadcast live. So again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where you can find out all about what we're doing, when it's going on, and that kind of thing. All right, so without much further ado, let's get to it. So Bree, go ahead.
Introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Okay, so I'm Brett McQueen, as Jeremy said. Right now, I'm a consulting athletic trainer and a doctoral student. I'm currently pursuing a doctorate of science in health sciences and athletic training from Rocky Mountain University in health professions in Provo, Utah. The consulting part is I don't work full-time for any one particular person or entity. I have set up some different PRN, which means as needed opportunities. I work for a couple different universities, and I also am an athletic trainer. I work with local police and fire departments, doing some different training with the tactical athletes. So that's kind of what I do right now.
Cool. Tell us about functional movement systems.
So, functional movement systems encompasses three different things. It's the functional movement screen, the Y balance test, and the selective functional movement assessment. The functional movement screen is a series of 7 tests with 3 additional clearing tests. It's the deep squat, inline lunge, hurdle step, shoulder mobility, active straight leg raise, rotary stability test, and trunk stability push-up. In addition to that, the 3 clearing tests, there's a shoulder clearing test that's essentially a subacromial impingement clearing test. Then there is a full body flexion test, which is child's pose, and a full body extension test, which looks kind of like cobra pose in yoga. Those 3 tests are designed to impinge long nerves and underlying tissues to see if there's a problem or pain there. The scoring system on it, each test has 3 points. 3, you move perfect. 2, you cheat, but you can get the movement. 1, you try to cheat and can't do the movement. And 0 is pain. Pain is kind of like the body's check engine light, and it should always be regarded as some sort of underlying thing. Okay, the whole principle of it is don't push through pain, get it checked out by a healthcare professional. The functional movement screen was originally designed for strength coaches and otherwise to kind of get a broad sense of how somebody moves. It's not intended to diagnose anything. The Y balance came along a few years later, and it's based off the Star Excursion balance test. I don't know if you guys have heard about that at all. They did a whole bunch of research and came up with the 3 most prevalent directions in the star excursion balance test. So they made this test kit and came up with a whole bunch of research that that says that essentially you need to have certain reaches with both your legs and arms in relation to your height. They tied this in with the Y balance test, or with the functional movement screen, and together they're used as a screening tool, and a lot of the research has been done with like high school basketball players in Indiana and Ohio, and they're showing that low scores there, they extremely high injury prediction rate.
All right, so just kind of to summarize what you were saying there, if by using the screening, if they score low on the screening, then they're more likely to be injured, or they have a higher incidence of injury?
Correct. Correct. So those two, the FMS and Y balance, are kind of on the screening end. You look at it before something happens and try to correct any dysfunction that might be present before they get injured. Now, once they get injured or they're having pain, that's where the selective functional movement assessment comes in. And the SFMA is designed to only be used by healthcare professionals. Athletic trainers, physical therapists, occupational therapists, chiropractors, physicians, whoever. You have to have a license to use it. Yes, SFMA.
Yeah. It essentially. she's tweeting, and so she's tweeting on my Twitter, so she's trying to catch it, and yeah. You talk a little fast for her, but it's all right, we're good. We're good. Keep going.
Their Twitter account is at SFMA Rehab.
Mm-hmm. There you go. At SFMA Rehab.
I follow all those guys. They're awesome. So, anyway, the SFMA breaks down sort of similar patterns as the functional movement assessment. You've got a cervical breakout, shoulder flexion, shoulder extension, multi-segmental extension, multi-segmental flexion, multi-segmental rotation, single leg stance, and overhead squat. Those different things are classified as functional non-painful, functional painful, dysfunctional painful, or dysfunctional non-painful. It doesn't really give a score. It just says, how did the patient feel doing those? So you go by the guidelines of what the appropriate movement should be, and either they achieve it or they don't, and they have pain or they don't. The SFMA guides you through a series of flowcharts and breakouts down to a diagnosis. You may have somebody with knee pain, and you can't find anything wrong with their knee. Have you guys seen any patients with what we'd probably call patellar tendonitis? And they just have kind of that general knee pain, but you can't find anything wrong with the knee? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
So the SFMA will help you narrow it down to maybe there's a problem in the hip, or maybe there's a problem in the ankle, or maybe there's a problem in their neck, their cervical spine, that's causing overstress and overpressure at their knee. So it's a really cool tool to use. All of the systems are grounded in primitive movement patterns and the neural developmental sequence. How we develop as babies from the ground up. Starts with rolling and then all the way up to squatting, walking, and eventually running. So instead of it takes it from a ground up approach rather than the traditional medical model of, well, you're an athlete, so let's get you back to running as quick as we can. It breaks it all the way down and builds it back up. So it's quite unique compared to most of the other systems that are out there.
All right, so quick question. I have a 3-year-old and a 18-month-old. Do you think that me crawling around on the floor, or, you know, like playing with those kids, since they are babies that learn to walk, do you think in any way that's going to benefit me, or is it just completely irrelevant? Because you're talking about like looking like the baby, so.
Yes and no. If you're crawling right, then yes, it will probably help you. If you're not crawling right, then it probably won't help you. And I know that sounds like a very elementary thing of, oh, go crawl, okay, or roll over. It's a matter of what muscles and what firing patterns do you use to crawl or roll around. You know, we tend to use our big, bulky muscles, glutes, quads, superficial abs, everything to move around, but those aren't the ones that really control the spine and how it moves with those different activities. Does that make sense?
Right. So we can do the movement, it's just maybe not correctly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So, real quick, you are up in Missouri right now?
Yes.
All right. So you went to school in Missouri and then came down here to Texas to do your master's work, and now you're back up in Missouri doing your doctoral work. But I see that are you doing online school in Utah?
Yeah, it's a distance education. It sounds less University of Phoenix that way. We actually have to go out to the university a few times a year. So essentially, think of your lecture classes as all being online, but then the lab portion of each of the classes, we go out and do 8 to 10 hour days every day for a week or week and a half to get that time in. So.
Gotcha. All right, and so in what you're doing right now in the university, you're getting your doctorate of athletic training?
Yes. It's doctorate of science in health sciences and athletic training.
And is any of it focusing on the FMS type stuff, the functional movement, or?
Actually, I had a class last fall, advanced therapeutic interventions, that was completely functional movement screen and selective functional movement assessment based. It was the basis of the entire course.
So, did you feel like the professor there, since you're already trained and training people in doing this, or what?
A little bit compared to my classmates. It was a unique opportunity for me to help my colleagues through the material and provide additional real-world examples to them while they were learning the information for the first time. Interestingly enough, the functional movement systems has been around since the late 90s, and some of my colleagues had never heard of the FMS. So Dr. Robert Butler was the guy who taught the course for us. He's out at Duke, brilliant guy, and he really, really made a lot of sense of the material, even though I've been doing it for quite a while. I mean, I started FMS stuff my freshman year of college in 2006 and then moved into SFMA more in 2011. Even though I've been doing it for a few years, it was still nice to come back to those basic principles and rehash a lot of the foundational information of the two systems.
Very cool. We have I have a friend here. She's been a guest. I think she's listening live with her class. Kat Webb, if you're listening, then hey, I'm talking about you. She's actually in the doctorate program now, and she said one of the things that they're discussing in their program is the FMS and that kind of thing. And so I was just wondering how all it played together. So.
Yep.
Can you discuss the process of being trained in FMS?
Yeah, so the FMS, there's two levels. There's FMS 1 and FMS 2. FMS 1 essentially describes the screening process and how do you go about actually breaking down the numbers and looking at somebody's movement. So FMS 1 is strictly screening. There's very little intervention that's discussed there. It can be done two ways. You can go to a seminar that's hosted. There's a lot of them that are hosted by Perform Better, where you can do just FMS 1 or just FMS 2 or a combo course over a couple days. Then there's also an online for FMS 1. So you can go through all the PowerPoints. There's video lectures. There's manuscripts to read. They also point you to a couple of books to read to get more background information. And then you take a test at the end to see if you are knowledgeable enough to be certified as FMS 1. So you can do it those two ways. FMS 2, you have to go to a course for. And they're hosted all over the world, really. I think this year they're doing some in Norway and Sweden, maybe. And they're just all over the place now. I know they've done them in Australia. So, but they're also all over the U.S. They frequent, in Texas, usually it's either Dallas or Houston. Most other places aren't really quite big enough for those conferences because they draw in hundreds of people. I think I've seen one in Austin before, but I've only seen one. Dallas is probably the most common one that they go to. So that's for FMS 1 and 2. Why Balance? If you're interested in the Why Balance, it's just an online course that you can get to through their website, Move to Perform. And then the SFMA is a 2 to 3 day course, depending on where you go, that you can get certified for SFMA 1. And there's also an SFMA 2 that goes into a lot more of the corrective strategies, and it's also a couple-day course.
Okay. So I thought I was under the impression that all that was the same thing. So the FMS is different, a different certification. The SFMA is a different certification, and the Y Balance is a different certification?
Correct.
All right.
They're all under the Functional Movement Systems umbrella, but they're each individually different entities.
All right. Yeah, because when we did the things at SWATA, we kind of did them all together, and I guess it was just like an overview.
Yes.
I got you. All right. Does she have a question? All right. So, talk a little bit more. Is it important to do FMS 1 and then 2, or SFMA 1 and then 2, or because you said the FMS 1 is kind of like a seminar, or like you do your own thing and then see if you can pass the test, and then FMS 2 is you have to go to a course and then be taught. So do you have to be 1 before you can be 2 on FMS?
Yes, you must be FMS 1 before you can do FMS 2. A lot of folks will do them both on the same weekend, and you can do that, certainly, but they do require you to at least be FMS 1 before you do FMS 2. In general, people who are just starting out in the profession, I tend to recommend that you start with the FMS. It's a little bit easier to understand and allows more room for error. Excuse me. And you also don't have to be credentialed or licensed to go through that certification and training. So, whereas the SFMA, you have to show them proof of your license to practice whatever your discipline is, in our case, athletic training, in order to go through that course. So FMS is a little bit more straightforward, and there aren't as many funky things to wrap your head around. I think once you're, 18, finish high school, if you wanted to go out and do the FMS 1, you could certainly do that. It's a little bit more cost-effective to go through FMS first. The online course is cheaper than the on-site course, and I believe there's a student discount for it, but don't quote me on that.
So the student discount would apply to high school, or they have to be 18 first?
I believe it's college students.
Okay. Gotcha. All right, so we do have one of our students, Alex. She's sitting in the middle. I'm not sure if you can tell. There you go. She raised her hand there in the Skype camera. She had a question about softball. She plays softball, so do you remember?
Oh, I don't know how to say it, but do you think they have, like, I don't know, like a person who shows you how to, like, throw a softball correctly? Like, so, because, like, I throw it sidearm, so I get, like, a lot of pain on my elbow.
Okay. So are you looking more for a technique coach for softball throwing, or are you looking
like how to correctly, like
how to correctly throw?
Yeah,
that's not going to be something that the FMS is going to provide. Now, what I will say is there are a lot of people who throw sidearm with no pain. It's whatever works best for your body. There may be some sort of underlying dysfunction that you have, whether it's in your shoulder, your spine, your hips, wherever, that is causing overstress and overpressure at your elbow when you're throwing. Okay. Now, sidearm is not necessarily a natural motion, but neither is overhead throwing. Really, none of it's natural. But we do it anyway. So I'd be interested to see if there's another dysfunction that's maybe causing some of that pain. But at the same time, the FMS is not going to correct your sidearm throw. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay.
All right, so could you, like, if we were over Skype, I mean, I'm not saying right now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if we were to set it up sometime just to watch the motion, is that something you could do, or is that something you'd have to be here and be able to run through several different tests, or be able to, like, put your hands on and measure and that kind of thing? So basically, could you do these tests being able to see over Skype, or is this something you need to be on site?
Yes and no. It's always easier to be there in person. What I've kind of started doing with the FMS is if I start running into a whole bunch of really low scores or pains with the FMS, I tend to go ahead and finish the test, kind of get my baseline information, and then move right on into the SFMA. And the FMS, I've done the FMS over Skype before several times for different people, but it's going into that SFMA and really diagnosing the issue that you can't do over Skype.
Well, I mean, that's at least a cool way to kind of get the ball rolling.
And so absolutely.
Maybe one day we can figure out how to set up a good video conference, and you can come back and just demonstrate what we should be doing. And I mean, obviously not making a certified or anything like that, but just kind of demonstrating what we could be doing, or the just the possibilities of FMS.
We could certainly do that.
Very cool.
What do you feel are some limitations of the program?
So, limitations of the program. One limitation is that the scoring is pretty broad. It's pretty well defined what constitutes as a score of 3 on the FMS. You know, it's perfect movement without compensation. But there are a lot of ways somebody can achieve the movement and compensate to get a score of 2. So that two score is really, really, really broad. And that trips people up a lot of times because there's really no set way that you earn a 2. It's just compensated, but they achieve the movement. So there's often a lot of debate going back and forth on that. Same with the score of 1. one of the principles that they really teach and try to hammer home is if it, when in doubt, score low. The worst thing you can do when you're looking at a patient or client is assume they have a problem and then later on find out they don't. But if you assume they don't have a problem and then move forward, but they really do, you can set yourself up for failure really, really fast. So always with anything, assume there's a problem until proven otherwise. Some other limitations are it. A lot of people try to use it as a performance predictor, and it's not a performance predictor. It is a baseline movement predictor. There are a lot of studies out there that show different scores are better predictors of injury than others, but it's not a performance predictor. It isn't designed to be, and it never will be. But it's a good baseline measurement of where there might be a problem. So those are probably the main limitations of it. It's also, it can be time consuming sometimes, and by time consuming I mean take about 10 minutes a patient or client. Usually after you've done several thousand of them, you can get it down to doing an FMS in 6 or 7 minutes, which is very helpful when you're trying to screen 300 or 400 athletes in a couple of days or a week. So it can be a very, very cool, fast tool, but sometimes it's cumbersome. It takes space, so a gym or an open room is best for it. So it is a little bit limited if you don't have the right space and facilities or time to do it.
All right, so I forgot to ask this earlier when we were talking about the process of being trained. One of the things I was considering doing is I write a lot of grants, and so I think that as we go through this, we're going to hear you talk about some of your success stories and whatnot. So if there's a way I could prevent my athletes from being injured, then I want to be able to do that. But at the same time, if I can do that with all of the athletic trainers within our district, would it be possible to have a workshop, like someone come to Pasadena and then, you know, all of us do a 1 day training on FMS there? Or
absolutely. The functional movement systems, I know they have different folks around the country who can travel to you and teach that screening. It does cost quite a bit of money. I believe they'll come in for around $10,000 and do a 1 day course for you. So it is rather expensive, but it's well worth it. And if you get, you know, if you get 20, 25 people to attend that course, then it becomes only, you know, $400 or $500 per person, which is about what it is at a normal conference. So you can certainly do that. I know there's, we've got somebody up here in Missouri who does training for them. And then I know there's somebody in the Austin, San Antonio area who does a lot of training for them as well. So they can, I think those are probably the two closest folks to come down there, but either one of them would be wonderful.
Pardon the interruption. If you're watching live on the Google Plus, I had George and Marlon move the camera so you could actually see Brett talking on the Skype computer. So I know the video was real shaky there for a minute. And so again, I apologize for the interruption in the broadcast, but then I wanted to make sure that they understood why the video was so terrible there for a minute. All right. So you said the course, back to Brett, the course costs probably $400 or $500 to, if I was to go and, you know, just for the course, if I was to take it in San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, wherever it was, you know, and then obviously I have to pay for my hotel and all that kind of stuff separate. But that would be your guess about for FMS 1 or 2 or what?
Great question. Let me, I can go to their website here real quick and look up, exactly what their prices are. I believe it's, well, here, we'll just pull it up. Get certified. Seminars and events.
All right, so while you're looking that up, Springwoods High School, which is Catweb, where she is, she said one of the, they need clarification on what FMS is. So can you, I'm not exactly sure what she means, but we'll give this a shot. Can you define FMS? She asked one of the students to do it, but maybe she was just asking one of them to ask the question. I'm not sure.
What is the the functional movement screen is simply just the series of 7 tests and 3 clearing tests. It is a tool that looks at those 7 basic movement patterns. That's all it is.
All right, so FMS is functional movement screen, which is the 7 movement patterns that looks for deficiencies.
Correct.
Okay, so hopefully, Kat, if that's what you were looking for, then good. If not, then let us know and we'll ask again. All right, so, Brett, did you find the prices there?
Yeah, so I found on their website just the next 2 that are coming up.
What's that website so Aisha can tweet it out?
It's functionalmovement.com.
All right.
And the FMS level 1, if you go to a conference, is $450. And then, oh guys, that's cheap for a conference. Come on.
I've never been on one. Too.
Yeah, that's cheap for one. And then a combo course, both FMS 1 and 2 over a weekend, is $750.
That cheap too?
Yes. Yes, it is. Well, you get 2 certifications out of that. So that's, I mean, that's a pretty good price.
$750?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I mean, you could pay that much for one course that you don't even get certified in casting.
I mean, the national meeting annually is 300 something?
Yeah, three, four, something.
And you don't get any extra credentials or certifications out of it. So, that's a pretty good price for additional letters behind your name. And then the home study course, I'm trying to find a price on that. I think it's cheaper, but I'm not 100% sure.
All right, so I mean, we could work within that. I mean, if it's cheaper than, you know, if you
$379
for the FMS 1.
Yes, for the home studies, $379.
All right, not bad, not bad. So if I was looking to get, there's 10 of us, 11 of us within the district. If I was looking to get 11 of us certified, I have to plan for, I don't know, $8,000-$10,000, huh?
Something like that, and I don't know exactly what their costs are. But I have heard that it's around that. So you just have to contact them and figure out exactly what their prices are.
All right. That sounds like a really good idea. Aisha, you tweeted that out, right? Functional movement?
Uh-huh.
Okay, because I'll look on my Twitter later and get that website. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
What are some of the strengths?
Oh, strengths of the program. Well, there's all sorts of those. I think for me, the biggest strength is it gives me a systematic approach to how I do things. Every patient, every athlete you deal with is different. Each one of you is different. Each one of you moves a little bit different. But I look at you all the same way. Okay? And so it's a good way to not miss details if you go through your assessment the same way every single time. So functional movement system or functional movement screen, Y balance, and SFMA, all of them are a systematic approach to human movement evaluation. And you look across other health disciplines and there's standards for blood panel screenings. There's standards for X-rays. There's standards for MRIs. There's standards for all sorts of different care, but there isn't a standard operating procedure of movement. Nothing exists in the musculoskeletal realm of what we should be following. And I think that this actually provides a very good systematic approach. Very much, I don't know if you guys are math junkies, but it's very algorithmic in nature. If this, then this. So I think that's very good. It also, with the injury prediction values, most of the literature out there says that if you are below a 14 out of 21, you are anywhere from 20 to 65% greater chance to sustain an injury. Now, when I talk about that, I'm talking about non-contact injuries. You're running down the field or landing from a jump and you tear your ACL. Nobody touched you. Nobody hit you. Non-contact injuries. Obviously, when two forces collide, something's going to break. It happens. You know, football players collide, stuff happens. Okay. We can't prevent those, but we can prevent that lineman who's pushing the defender down the field from stepping in a hole on the grass and tearing his knee, right? We can prevent that. We can make sure everything's strong enough and mobile enough for that not to happen. So it helps identify some of the biggest risk factors of injury. The five main risk factors of injury are: 1, previous injury; 2, asymmetry; 3, poor neuromuscular control; 4, BMI; and 5 is just stupidity. You know, how often do you hear, "Hey, watch this," and somebody comes up hurt? So the previous injury thing, you know, I think a hot topic right now is Lindsey Vonn with the Olympics. She hurt her knee. She tried to rehab, and she hurt it again. Okay? I don't know any of the care that she got. I don't know any of the strength programs she got. But in general, once you blow a knee out, you are far more likely to blow that same knee out again. That's just the way it is. Previous injury is the number one predictor of future injury. So it doesn't surprise me at all that she is now injured again and unable to compete in the Olympics. It's very unfortunate, but she'll take the next 4 years, get strong, and go at it again in 2018. Is that right? Yes.
Yep.
So that's what happens, you know. You get injured, it happens again. So that, I think that's the biggest strength of the program is just giving a set approach to it and using the data that's out there to classify where you are with your movement and strength.
Now, I have a question. Whenever we did this at SWATA, I was your subject. I was the dummy or the whatever. And so whenever I did my squats or my step-overs, I wasn't very good at it. You know, I'm 32 years old. I'm not an athlete. I don't stretch a lot. So it's understandable that my muscles are not flexible and that kind of thing. How likely is it that if I was to perform that test yesterday, today, and then tomorrow, that my scores are going to improve over those three?
Yeah, interesting you bring that up. There was a study that came out either in November or December, I don't remember which, that said that there is as much as a 2-point improvement with just 1 hour of coaching on how to perform the test better. That's, you know, if we go back to the limitations, that's probably another limitation of the test, is there is a little bit of a learning curve, and once you know the exact way to do the test, you can probably score higher. Do You know, take the miraculous play that somebody does in a basketball game, runs down, jumps over four guys, and dunks the basket or dunks the ball, right? Can you rehearse that? Can you predict how he's going to move through the air and be able to dunk that ball?
No.
Probably not. It's just a snapshot in that moment, right? The FMS is kind of the same thing. It's how do you move right now? If you want to get technical and down to it, every breath we take, we change over some 40% of the gases in each cell. That's every breath. Now, the average person takes about 16,000 breaths per day. You know, if you're not working out, not increasing your breathing rate at any point, you know, just the normal breathing, it's about 16,000 breaths per day. So an athlete's probably closer to 22 or 24,000 breaths per day with their activity. So if you change over your cells and gases that many times throughout a day, you change from morning to evening. So we would expect somebody's movement to change from one day to another. But it's not going to change so drastically that it will grotesquely affect the score. If you have a hip mobility problem that doesn't get corrected, you are still going to score poorly on those tests the next day. If you have an ankle mobility problem, same thing. You're going to score poorly one day to the other unless we do some sort of intervention to correct that. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think they said yes.
Yeah.
Tell us some of your success stories using FMS.
Oh, success stories. I could go on about those for hours. Well, just in general, how are we doing on time, Jeremy?
They have 10 minutes till I let them go. I think 8 minutes till I let them go. And so okay. If we need to stay longer, then we can.
Okay. So just in some general success stories, I won't even tell you specific athletes. We at one institution I've worked at, we have dropped our injury rates by 64% over the last 5 years by implementing FMS screening of all of our athletes twice a year. All right. We screen them. Go ahead.
Can you say that again? 64% over the last 5 years?
Yes.
Oh, and doing this twice a year?
Yes, we screen every athlete twice a year and then do weekly interventions with them. So we take team trends and go in and work with, so say our men's soccer program. They all have stuck rigid ankles. They all have stuck rigid hips, and they all in general have poorly firing cores, okay? Because all they want to do is do abs and get those 6 or 8 packs for whatever reason. The core is kind of like a can. The top of it's the diaphragm, the bottom of it's the pelvic floor, and everything all around is the can. If you take a can of soda, you can't, and you try to manipulate that can when it's full, you can't. You can't crinkle the sides. You can't do anything with it. You can stand on it, and it won't give way, okay? It's highly pressurized. But as soon as you puncture that can in any way, whether it's popping the top or poking a hole in it or, you know, shooting a 22 bullet through it, whatever you want to do, it you lose that pressure. So the core is kind of the same way. As soon as you lose pressure at any point in the core, you're going to have a weak core. You can't be over-dominant in any one area. So we take those team trends, poor core firing, hip mobility problems, ankle mobility problems, and we work on just those specific things with that specific team. Every team gets an hour a week. And through that, we have and that's only off-season. We don't work with them in-season. Through that, we've reduced our injury rates by 64% over the last 5 years of implementing that. I can't even tell you the hundreds of thousands of dollars we've saved in in medical costs from just doing that.
All right, so let's clarify that. What's the 64% injury? Does that mean like athletic training room visits, period, or does that mean things that require a doctor's visit? How do you quantify that 64%?
So the 64% is we took the total number of injuries then and the total number of injuries now and calculated the percent, and they're 64% lower.
So basically injury reports are 64% lower.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean fewer athletic training room visits. With a lot of this stuff, it's a lot more work on the front end, but a lot less work on the back end. So we have frequent flyers in there who are prone to injury. You know, our football safeties and cornerbacks that are constantly getting beat up and having, you know, a surgery a year from contact injuries, we know those guys are highly susceptible to repeat injuries, so we work extra hard with them to reduce other factors that might cause a problem. So it's a lot more preventative work than actual rehab work. So maybe the term you want to use is prehab, you know. So we do a lot to focus on fixing a problem before there's a problem.
Gotcha. So, I mean, 64% over 5 years is pretty phenomenal. And I think I could probably write up a grant that would, I don't know, maybe I'll have to get with you and see if there's a number value that you've come up with. That way I can put that in there. Because, I mean,
And I'm sure there's stuff in the literature that's out there that, you know, and that's obvious, that's unpublished data right now for that 64%. But we're in the process of writing it up. You know, another success story, last year with my Division I baseball team, I had zero non-contact injuries.
See, that's something that I think it's Valerie Tinklepaw over at TCU.
Mm-hmm.
I think she said the same thing with her girls' basketball team. Is they didn't have anybody miss a day of practice or a game for like non-contact injuries or something like that.
Yep. Yeah, and it's simple stuff, but it's the Western medical model has become very reactionary in design. Something happens, then we treat it. This model is much more, let's look at it and fix it before it happens. And you'd be surprised how happy coaches are with you when you can keep their kids on the field and playing well by stuff that could be prevented.
All right, so quickly, how much of your time during the day? In passing ISD, we don't teach classes. We teach sports medicine, and then we're in the athletic training room. Some athletic trainers are teaching. I used to teach 4 classes of biology and then would come down here. How much time during the day would I have to invest in this prehab to make this a reality?
So you could do it a couple different ways. What I have done in the past is the scores that are exceptionally low or pain, I work with them one-on-one as if I'm seeing them for rehab for a specific injury. And so that takes up your normal amount of time. For the rest of them, what I did in Corpus Christi was I would set, okay, here are these guys. They're all in a group. They need this thing. Here are these guys. They're in this group. They need this thing. And I gave that to our strength conditioning coach. And during their warm-ups, we just incorporated corrective exercise as a part of their warm-up for their lifting time. So maybe it was ankle self-mobilization. Maybe it was a specific foam rolling drill. Maybe it was a specific stretch that I came up with that would help correct their dysfunctional movement. And they spent 4 or 5 minutes a day during their workout doing that corrective exercise and nothing else. So my actual time with them was very minimal.
Yeah, so what you're doing is you're testing them, figuring it out, setting it up, and then letting them run with it.
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay. I understand. All right. We have Marissa, why don't you ask your last question, then I'll let you guys get out of here.
Where can someone find out more?
So there's a ton of different resources. There are a bunch of books that have been written on the subject. Gray Cook has Athletic Body and Balance. He has Movement. And then there's a few chapters in the textbook Musculoskeletal Interventions by Voigt Hoogenboom and Prentice that's got a couple different chapters on the FMS, and then as well as a lot of different corrective strategies that are in there. There's functionalmovement.com, there's movementbook.com, there's the SFMA website, which escapes me at the moment, but you can find it on functionalmovement.com. There's movetoperform.com, which is the Y Balance website, and it's actually the number 2 in there, movetoperform. So there's those that are FMS specific. If you want just general movement and corrective strategies or proper movement in general, I encourage you to look at a lot of the RKC and Strong First stuff out there. Pavel does a great job with all that stuff. There's the Naked Warrior, Convict Conditioning 1 and 2, you know, Enter the Kettlebell, if kettlebells are your thing. I think they're a great tool. So there's tons of different resources out there on this stuff.
All right, so do you have a website that has all these links to it, or?
I do not, but I can certainly put them all in a Word document, send them to you to post up with this stuff.
That would be excellent.
Okay.
Because there was a lot there. So, all right. You know, there's more questions and more stuff we can talk about, but these kids are going to go to lunch, and so why don't you guys put your headphones down, just give them a bye. Thanks for
thank
coming.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. One thing I did want to ask earlier, is there any use in doing this with, like, junior high or high school kids? Because you were talking about doing with your college athletes, and, you know, in high school there's a whole lot of athletes. So what age group is going to benefit the most?
I would say any age group. Movement is movement no matter whether they're 9 or 90. There are groups doing research right now on fall risk in the elderly population using the FMS as a mark for that. And actually, I just both my folks are in their mid-50s, and I just screened them when I was home for the holidays and got them going on some corrective stuff, and in just 5 days they made drastic improvements and, you know, feel better getting out of bed, moving around in general. So just some simple things. I have done this. I think the youngest patient I ever did this on was 6. And it applies all over the gamut. So the thing that you're going to see with that junior high and high school population is you're going to see a lot more change between screens, probably. My collegiate athletes, unless we're actively intervening with them, they don't really change score much. Whereas the kids that are still developing, gaining muscle mass, kind of getting through that, what you call the motor moron stage, where they're just kind of goofy and lanky. Mm-hmm. As they're going through that, they're going to change a whole lot more. So you may have a kid that's a 9 and then goes on a screen, goes through a growth spurt and starts putting on some weight, some muscle mass, you know, getting strong, and all of a sudden, 6 months later, he's 12 or 14 on the screen, and you didn't intervene at all. It's just him developing and growing. So it's similar to the results you see with a lot of the concussion testing of how the brain develops and the body works. So you're going to see that a lot with that age population, but it's certainly appropriate to do the screening.
Yeah, see, I was wondering that, I mean, because you were talking about the elderly, you know, at my church, there's a lady that she's real sweet, but she kind of walks like hunched over. And I'm just wondering, you know, is there something that at that point, if she's like 70, 80, that she can begin to do to even straighten out? And obviously, you can't just say that over the phone because there may be some problem with her discs or something like that. But, you know.
I would say she's probably a better candidate for maybe the SFMA to look at what's dysfunctional and then to go on a corrective strategy from that. Again, with the FMS is for healthy populations. The SFMA is for injured populations. So.
All right. And then in the courses, do they teach you the corrective exercises or do you have to kind of be creative or do you have to, like, how do you come up with the corrective exercises?
Yes. the level two of each course is more of the corrective strategies. Most of my training was in, obviously the basic athletic training curriculum, but we had a lot more rehab emphasis, because that was the specialization of our faculty and our clinical sites. And so I learned, honestly, I learned all the corrections before I learned how to actually do the screening properly. So for me, I kind of went backwards and I looked at everything of, okay, how can I correct that rather than how can I screen that? So keeping in that mentality, it's worked well for me. And a lot of times I'll be honest, I do what a lot of us do and just go, oh, that's the problem, and go right to fixing it. I have to catch myself a lot of times, though, because that's not the systematic approach. You have to keep everything the same every time. So whereas, you know, we all know our tricks of, you know, hey, I can go improve somebody's hamstring flexibility in 30 seconds. Look at this. It's a party trick, you know, whatever you want to call it. But you really need to go through that systematic approach. But yeah, the second level of each of those teaches you more of the intervention stuff.
Gotcha. All right, so this is something that I'm really pretty interested in. One of our athletic trainers that used to work in our district, he was really involved with the girls' weight room. Like, he was the girls' strength and conditioning coordinator, and they really reduced the number of injuries, but that consumed a lot of his time because he was always in the weight room teaching them how to lift correctly and this kind of thing. And so I would like to be able to reduce the number of injuries, but not consume every single day and not have to be the one in the weight room all the time. You know, I'd like to be able to take care of athletes or do the podcast or teach kids, that kind of thing. And so I think with the FMS and the SFMS, I think it'll really be, if it's something that can bring in here, something that can benefit our entire district and obviously from there, our entire community. So.
Right. And what I've found with it is you can give somebody cues to correct their squat until you're blue in the face. But if they have a dysfunction that's prohibiting them from doing that, they can try all day long and they will never get it, no matter what. So the FMS will help you correct those different strategies to where maybe your coaching cues on the squat will actually work. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, is there anything else you really wanted to add?
The systems are awesome. they take some time to learn, and with anything, you know, I learned by doing them on people and just learning from it. I didn't make a diagnosis or a corrective strategy off of a screen I did for real for probably 150 or 200 of them. Just because you need to get the system down and understand it fully immerse yourself in it, or you're just kind of halfway beating your head against the wall. You know, at least give every, you know, do 20 free of charge. Don't try to correct anybody off of them. Just figure out the process of the screen and make sure you understand that before you you really go to do it. And if you go through the certification, FMS has an app now for screening that you can – you plug in the client's information, you know, and their email address, and then as you're going through – while you're screening, if you forget the cues, there's a button there that'll tell you how to screen, what to look for, show you, the screener, a video of how it's supposed to look. If I can't remember if that's a one or a two, hey, there's a video that shows me. And then you punch in the numbers, and at the end, you click save, and it emails out a report of what's dysfunctional, why it's dysfunctional, and some general things you need to do to correct that dysfunction. It doesn't give you specific exercises, but it says, okay, you need to improve your ankle mobility, your hip mobility, and your trunk stability. So it'll send that to you and the client so that you have good stored documentation of what to do with that. Yeah, I'll put together a list of different resources for you, And I'll throw my email address on there as well, so anybody else listening in can feel free to email me and ask questions. And if I don't have the answer, I'll certainly try to point you in the correct direction.
Did you want to include your email out right here? Or?
Yeah, it's just simply Brett, B-R-E-T-T dot McQueen, M-C-Q-U-E-E-N, at outlook.com.
There you go, Brett.McQueen at outlook.com.
Correct.
All right, so then you can definitely find out more about FMS, SFMA, or Y-Balance from him there. It was great talking to you, Brett, and I feel like I learned a lot. I think the kids enjoyed it, and hopefully we can connect some more. So.
Outstanding. Sounds great.
All right, so I want to thank the people that helped make the podcast possible. This weekend, this Saturday, we have GHATS, which is the nation's largest free student athletic trainer clinic. They sponsor the CEU opportunity, so anybody listening to mostly Brett, but a little bit of me talk today can get CEU credits for listening, and especially being part of the podcast. And again, that's because it's the Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society. Chris Lenker from the atpodcast.net, I think that him kind of pushing the show where I talked with him, I think it's really gotten more people to listen because I looked at the numbers before and then after. And so I want to thank Chris Lenker, and if you could check out his podcast on atpodcast.net, and in the month of March, they're going to try and release one episode per day since it's National Athletic Training Month, so 31 days, 30 podcasts, or 30 days, 30 podcasts, something like that. And then Memorial Hermann, they do a lot to support us here, and they are the official healthcare sponsor of our district. So if you want to check out our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, we can watch live almost every Wednesday. I just talked to my dentist today, and I think there's going to be a Friday where he comes, so we can talk about dental injuries. And so that'll be pretty cool, but I'll post all the dates and things like that. So you can check out our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Twitter is PHSSportsMed, where Aisha tweeted out some of the things that Brett was saying today. Google Plus, Sports Medicine Broadcast, Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training. For Jeremy, Sports Medicine One Kids, and Brett McQueen, that's a wrap.